Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and it's a physical therapy day. Thanks for joining in with us. And here to share their insight and advice, a couple of folks that you've heard many a time here. One, Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Jill, welcome back.
It's great to be here.
And Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, recently retired from the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And Lori, good to see you.
It is good to be here, Larry. So I've had a good run at UW. Love their physical therapy departments. But my sister and I have started a new little venture called Start Strong PT. And we're trying to help people improve access and get started on their physical therapy sooner, because a lot of times there's a wait. So
yeah, they wait too long.
Yeah, the access to healthcare is just so challenging, and you'll hear of patients who finally get motivated. They finally go in and see the physician to see what's going on, and the physician says, yes, you need physical therapy, and the patient may be motivated and ready to go, and then find out that with their insurance, it's a 4 to 6 week wait, and they're ready to go now, and so we would be kind of filling that bridge or that gap.
Yep.
Pretty cool.
And until their insurance-based physical therapy can start. And 4 to 6 weeks, that's optimistic, Jill.
Yeah. Well,
You will hear from some patients that it's more like 6 to 10 weeks to get in, depending upon what your need is.
And the thought process behind all this is we're trying to improve outcomes. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we want them to access their healthcare system and that we want them to use their insurance, but hopefully it will decrease the burden on the healthcare system because they're coming in, hopefully, better on their
a little
rehab
bit better.
Journey.
I would expect so, for sure.
We would sure hope so. Yeah.
Well, we can talk some more about that, but and you guys are still going to be with us.
Oh, yeah.
Not going anywhere. I'm still working full time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm too young to retire. I'm the younger sister.
Yeah. I'm betting that there are folks out there with an ache, a pain, a sprain, or a strain that have a question for you and maybe an experience to share. And if you do, as you're listening in here, I hope you'll join in. What physical therapy questions do you have? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Lori, just one more. What will you remember as the best parts of your career at UW?
What a great question.
Mm-hmm. The best parts are being one-on-one with my patients and hearing their stories and trying to match their physical therapy interventions that I select for them to what works for them in their life. And that comes from listening to the patient, from hearing them, from really listening to what they need. And that was the best part. I will miss the patients the most. I loved my patients.
The one thing you always said is if you could make one person who never exercised an exerciser or believe in exercise. I can't remember exactly how you said it.
A lifetime exerciser.
Yes.
That was always my mantra. If I can turn somebody who has not been an exerciser into a lifetime exerciser, that's the best thing I can do for them, because we know about outcomes for people who are regular exercisers. Across so many dimensions of health, from mental well-being, vision if you're outside, improving your long-distance vision, cardiovascular, diabetes, dementia. I mean, the list goes on and on.
The list goes on. And one of the exercises actually we're going to talk about today is walking as exercise. Jill, let me turn to you for that. How efficient is walking at keeping us in shape?
Well, Larry, like everything else, that depends. My students hate it when we say that, but walking is a very good form of exercise. And part of the reason, kind of what Lori alluded to, is if you listen to your patient and you can find an exercise that's easy and convenient for them, such as walking, it's a great strategy. The issue with walking is it depends on where you are in the health spectrum. If you're healthy and biking at a high intensity and running, walking isn't going to be a good enough cardiovascular activity for you. If you're new to exercise, walking may be a great way to start your exercise program. So I think just saying walking in and of itself doesn't really answer it. It's all about the speed. Are there hills involved? What's happening with your heart rate? The talk test, are you having difficulty or are you unable to, or are you able to talk but unable to sing? So your heart rate is up fairly high. So it's not a leisurely stroll with your 12-year-old dog like me.
Mm-hmm. It has to do with intensity.
Right.
So, you know, they talk about walking as an activity, but not necessarily meeting the criteria for exercise because it depends upon the intensity and your current fitness level. So you need to, if you're looking at it as exercise, you need to ramp up the intensity. And that means perhaps building in some speed. So one of my favorite words, my kids love this word, fartlek.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, it's Swedish for speed play. And so if you're wanting to use walking as exercise, building in some speed where you start off at your usual pace, then increase your speed and then back to your usual pace, or add in some hills, things where you up the intensity. So that's what turns it into exercise rather than just activity.
Right. I live on top of a big hill, and we will see people running up our hill, turn around, walk back down, and doing that repeatedly, to Lori's point, some of the fartlek training. Now, I have a 12-year-old dog who's very overweight and diabetic. And so historically, a brisk walk with my dog, I would consider that exercise. I can't do that anymore. So now what I do instead, and I'm sure my neighbors think I'm crazy, but if you have an elderly dog who has to stop and sniff everything, which my dog does, while they're sniffing, I throw in single leg balance. I throw in body weight squats. I throw in some lunges. I now have started sidestepping when I walk with her, backwards walking with her. And I think our neighbors probably think I'm crazy. But at least it's kind of, as to Lori's point, kind of upping the ante a little bit and just making it so I'm not so resentful about just standing there while my dog sniffs every tree.
Oh, every blade of grass. I know. Right. Same thing with my elderly dog. Yeah. So,
and I suppose weight training...
Weight training has really come out as the holy grail for longevity. Resistance training is very important, and a minimum of 2 times per week is what the American College of Sports Medicine continues to recommend. And, you know, what I would definitely say is we used to just kind of Dewey Decimal, be dumb about it, 3 sets of 10, things like that. You can, especially with good supervision, guidance, and recommendations, regardless of your age, you can lift heavier. So I have changed how I lift weights lately based on that. And so, you know, repetitions 8, 9, and 10 should be hard, almost impossible to finish to get a good resistance.
Yeah. Interestingly, the New York Times today had a piece on, are some sports better for longevity than others, since you mentioned longevity?
And since you're retired, you already read the paper.
And since I'm tired, I already read it. Yes, exactly. So the things that they added to the recipe were making it social, because we know, particularly as you get older, how important socialization is. So they mention racket sports because they are social. And then, you know, we have the start, stop, direction change, which is good for balance. So it should be challenging. The other piece that works for racket sports is its whole body. It's not just lower extremity like cycling or walking or something like that. And then you have to do it consistently. So it has to be something you like.
Right.
So I'm not a big fan of playing tennis. I try to like it, but I can't be consistent with it because I don't love it. So I have to figure out something else.
Right. Well, I think this gets back to your point about listening to your patient and trying to make them a lifelong exerciser. You have to listen to what they like and what they enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you would never force someone to play tennis if that's not something that they're passionate about.
And to you, Larry, they mentioned golf as being whole body as well. And you have that trunk rotation, particularly if you walk, you're walking and you're bending, maybe squatting, and then you're rotating, swinging a club.
All
and it
that.
Tends to be social.
Right.
So all those things.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah. And I like to walk.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
right.
Well, we have many callers online with questions already. There's still a line open for you at 800-642-1234, but let's turn to Martin in Green Bay, who's been waiting a bit. Martin, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Well, I got one leg. My left leg is very stiff in the knee and the hip, and this is something that I just can't seem to shake. In fact, if I lightly try to do some stretching on it, it seems to flare up, and then I'm not doing anything like that for a couple days at least. It's like the inflammatory response system in my body just overreacts to things in general. This has kind of been something that's been going on with me since I had COVID, back in 2000. And I'm just wondering if any ideas you got.
Is it just your left leg, or do you feel kind of this systemic stiffness or irritation when you do activities, Martin?
Yeah, I would say it's probably, a little bit more systemic. But earlier in the year, I'd done some cutting. I got the animal ash borer killing all my ash trees. I trimmed a bunch of ash trees down for a few days. And then my right elbow running that chainsaw.
Okay.
Just feeling better recently, and that was since spring, fourth month or so.
Yeah, that's not what we would consider a typical response from an activity. So you do an activity, you might be sore for a few days. But as you alluded to, Martin, you're talking about light stretching. Light activity really flares you up. That's not a typical response. So I would be a little concerned about something systemic going on, whether it's a rheumatologic condition or potentially long COVID or something else. So have you seen your primary care physician or a rheumatologist?
No, I'm not, I don't run to the doctor too much. In fact, it was over a year after I'd had COVID and I was suffering some really stiff things. I was ice boating once, and I couldn't even get off the ice. I'm shuffling my feet 6 inches in front of each other to move. And I'm still telling myself that's no big deal. That's how I am. And,
Well, you've called us, Martin.
Good for you. Yes.
Yeah, good for you. It's the first step. But given these symptoms that you're reporting, this sounds like a systemic issue. It could be any of a number of things. So you could start with your primary, but this is something that I think should be seen by rheumatology. And there are things that can help you. So will physical therapy help? Some, but I think before you would even begin a physical therapy program, you need to get to the bottom of what's causing this. And I think in that case, it's stepping into the medical system through either your primary or a rheumatologist and getting to the bottom of it. Yeah. Because as you noted, when you start some exercise, you can flare yourself. So there needs to be some level of control from the medical side in order to start exercise.
Good luck with that, Martin, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. I want to go back to the walking for a minute because we got an email from Claire. There have been all sorts of recommendations about the distance you walk each day or the step count you get. For a while, 10,000 steps was the gold standard. How much does distance or step count matter, and how many times a week do you need to walk?
So more than step count, I think it's all about, as Lori alluded to, the intensity. It's all about getting your heart rate up. So the American College of Sports Medicine recommends 150 minutes of exercise, or is it 75 of brisk?
75 of high intensity, 150 minutes of moderate intensity, and moderate intensity is the talk test that
Correct.
You described.
Okay.
So
however, Claire, you wanted to break those 150 minutes up. So I wouldn't get as waylaid with my steps as I would with the intensity and how long or time you're up in that intensity range.
So if you could get out there at least 30 minutes.
Five times a week, yeah.
Five times a week would do it.
Yep, exactly.
Lori Tyne-Brody, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at physical therapy on the program today with our guests. I should mention at 12:30, UW River Falls football team coach will be with us. They won the D3 national title, and we're going to hear about the win a little bit and also about the facilities there. They have the best facilities.
I've heard that from numerous people.
Unbelievable facilities.
Yes.
The Falcon Center. Just type that in and take a look at the little video that's on there about it. But right now, it's physical therapy. And Tony in Wausau has a question, I believe. Let's go there. Tony, hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I have a question. Back on December 19th, 2025, I dislocated my right shoulder. I went to the emergency room, and they reset it. And I've been going to physical therapy, but my range of motion's not getting any better.
So, Tony, when you say a range of motion, is it your range of motion when you use your muscles to get your arm overhead, or is it when they kind of move your arm for you?
When I try to use my muscle.
Okay. When the physical therapist moves it, is the physical therapist able to move it through a bigger range?
Yes, as long as I'm hanging on or somebody's hanging on to it.
Okay.
We can move it just fine.
All right. So can you tell us how you dislocated your shoulder?
I slipped on some ice and came down pretty hard on it.
Yeah, and may I ask your age?
70.
Okay. Yeah. Chances are you tore your rotator cuff.
Or part of it.
So in that age group, which I can see that from here.
Yes, you can.
I can see that from here. When you fall and dislocate your shoulder, you are most likely to tear your rotator cuff. And my guess is the reason you are unable to move it is you have a failed rotator cuff. So I would be asking my physical therapist about the status of my rotator cuff, and they can do some tests to test the strength. And I'm wondering if anybody did some imaging to look at that. But, you know, in general, you can function pretty well without your complete rotator cuff. It depends upon what muscles have been torn. But if you're unable to move it, it's been, a month?
December, almost exactly a month.
About a month, yeah. So have the physical therapist give you an assessment of the muscles around your shoulder, and then you can decide what's next. But chances are it's a rotator cuff tear.
Yeah, right. Good luck, Tony. Thank you very much for calling. Christine in La Crosse, your turn now. Hi, Christine.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Well, I got a question. I've worked in nursing most of my life. I'm retired now. I'm 67, and my shoulders are bad. I've had guided injections. I get steroid injections. And I had fell one time, and I couldn't even push myself off to get back to where I should get up.
Yeah, so your shoulder's weak.
Sounds really
like
weak.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Do you get relief when you get these guided injections or steroid injections, Christine?
Yes, I do, and they're temporary. I get shots every quarter about.
Okay, so it's definitely the joint.
And I assume you've been referred to physical therapy and have had some strengthening exercises?
Yes.
And how has that gone? What are the physical therapists saying about your shoulder status?
Just get the injections. You want to try to avoid shoulder surgery, because once you get a shoulder surgery, you're pretty much done for.
Oh,
so I wouldn't say
I'm
that.
Not sure. I don't know that I'd agree with that.
So with any total joint, Christine, there's always, Lori's line is always, you know, when is it time for a total joint replacement? And when your quality of life is decreased and the bad days outweigh the good days, it's probably time to consider it. What I will tell you is there's been a lot of really nice advances with regards to total shoulder replacements, including what we call a reverse total shoulder replacement for people who have rotator cuff damage or torn rotator cuff, or what we call cuff arthropathy. So I would say outcomes have actually improved considerably. Now, having said that, before you go into any total joint replacement, you want to make sure you have really failed all conservative care, which would include injections and a really, really good try of physical therapy. Lori, anything else to add to that?
Yeah, no. And again, I'm not sure where if she's getting injections into the joint. Do you know if you have arthritis in your joint?
Well, she said guided.
I do.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, well, they still do guided, even for subacromial.
True.
So, you know, like a near Mumford
right.
still has good outcomes. So, yeah, I would agree with what Jill said. The surgeries that I've seen at the shoulder are pretty darn good.
Now, having said that,
yes,
there's many things that go into making you a good surgical candidate,
right.
and physicians think of other things, comorbidities, diabetes, things like that. So just in and of itself, we're talking about the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
You may not be a good candidate for it. We're talking about total shoulder
arthropathy.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
In general.
Yeah.
All right. Christine, thank you very much for calling. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Brett in Eastern Dane County will turn to you. Hi, Brett.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Great program. I appreciate you helping us keep our New Year's resolution. We're 18, 19 days in now. So I've done like 4 Ironman and 3 marathons. And that's the sign of a slow learner, really. But I read a study that 2.5 minutes of high-intensity interval exercise that gets your heart rate to 85% of max for us old guys, that's about 120, equals about an hour of long, slow distance. And so I do the 16-minute workout, which is 4 minutes of high-intensity. And most people say they don't work out because they don't have time, and you're supposed to brush your teeth for 4 minutes, so this helps the rest of your body. And then 4 minutes of strength for bone density with dumbbells, 4 minutes of core and stretching, a modified yoga sequence. So, what does our therapist think about that? So.
Okay. Well. I think it's marvelous. So it's called high intensity interval training. And you are correct. For people who have limited time, that program works really well. So, you know, you're probably hitting your 75 minutes of high intensity. I haven't done the math on it, but high intensity works really well for some people, especially if they're busy. In terms of the math of like how many minutes equals how many minutes of long,
right.
slow distance, I can't tell you about the math.
Right. And the other thing I would think I would consider, as we age, we lose our fast twitch fibers and they kind of convert to slow twitch fibers. So at this point in my life, I always say I'm just one big slow twitch fiber.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to train both. I don't know that I would just do all high intensity quick. I'd still do some kind of slow, steady things as well and kind of mix it up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that way you're hitting all the fiber types.
Correct.
You know, slow, fast, and intermediate.
Right.
Celia, Brett, thank you very much for calling. Celia in Madison, your turn. Hi, Celia.
Hi, how are you?
Good, appreciate the call.
Well, I've done all kinds of exercises in my life, including gymnastics. And so late in my life, I took up jogging, which I didn't really care for because it was really boring.
Mm-hmm.
But I really found out that forget the 10,000 steps of walking. My quads were always very strong. It was the back of my legs, my hamstrings that were weak. And that's what jogging made much stronger. And it gave me such more of a sense of strength and endurance when I was like, if I was traveling and I had to walk with luggage and that kind of thing, it was just made a huge difference. And also I had a friend who was a dance therapist, and she said it was better to, on the high intensity, to run a half a mile as fast as you could rather than, you know, sometimes slower stuff. So I would mix that up. And I always think of, yeah, the Native Americans didn't jog after buffalo, you know.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, you know, you're mixing it up and all that variety, mm-hmm. which is really good, which what we've been talking about is heart rate high, heart heart rate low, muscle strengthening, balance, training your muscles differently. So, you know, variety is a spice of life.
Another emailer wondered what's the correct walking form or stride that kind of goes along with this.
Oh, wow.
I don't know that there is one.
Well, and what to do with the other part of it was, what do you do with, do you swing your arms?
Yes. So the counter rotation with the opposite arm coming forward as of opposite of your leg makes sense. Nordic walking using poles will up the ante a little bit. So, you know, what I would do, if you talk about what's the proper walking form, I would say making sure you have good shoes, varying your step length some from, you know, shorter, quicker steps to longer strides would make sense because you're going to hit your muscle groups a little bit differently. Kind of like Celia said with jogging, if you could build in a little bit of high speed, those are the most important aspects of this. And, you know, typically people have a pre-programmed walking program in their head, whatever it is. You know, you land on the heel, you roll on the outside border of your foot, you come across the metatarsal heads and out your big toe. The most important thing is that as your heel leaves the ground on the backside, that your weight bearing comes out at the end of your big toe. You don't want to be rolling off your arch.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So the big toe is really important in gait and exercise, bigger than most people think.
Right. And so for people who have arthritis in the primary joint of their big toe, it really affects your gait. Mm-hmm. So big toe is important. Didn't know it was that important now, did you? Yeah.
I was flashing back on last summer when I was away and my daughter Diane was in the house watching and feeding the kitties for me, and she did a little surveying of the house. And when I came home, there were 10 sets of tennis shoes.
Lined
up. And she says, why do you have? And I said, well, they've all been 500 miles or And when I get 500 miles on them, I set them aside and thinking that I'm going to use them for something else.
I have the same thing in my closet, Larry. I'm visualizing it right now.
Right, you'll convert them to your mowing shoes.
I've got like three pair of mowing shoes now, and
I think your point about making sure that your shoes, you don't wear out the life expectancy of your shoes is very important. I think you see that a lot as people, you know, shoes don't last forever.
Well, I've got Map My Run, so I know when I hit 500
miles. Perfect. Yeah, there you go.
And so, and it's always, oh, this feels so good when I get a new pair.
Right. Yep. You forget.
Right.
No.
Exactly.
Because you've accommodated to what you have.
Oh, man. Celia, thanks again. Dennis in Cudahy has a question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Dennis.
Good morning. Thank you for listening to my aches and pains.
Okay.
I've been diagnosed bone on bone in my knees for about 12 years. I used to be a runner, and I stopped running. I didn't have the pain. Now it's come up again. Mm. I'm 71 years old. So I went orthopedic surgeon. He did the x-rays and that again, your bone on bone, pathetic and all that kind of stuff. But I came across this book by Dr. Meredith Warner. She's a surgeon, orthopedic surgeon down south someplace like South Carolina or something. And she's got a program that works on diet and exercise, and I've been doing it. The diet is, I don't do sugar, more of a Mediterranean diet. I do Montessori cherry, omega fish oil. The exercise, I went to the surgeon gave me a recommendation for physical therapy, and I went there, and they put a program together for me. It's resistance bands on my walking my legs, doing squats, core strengthening, balance stuff, the lift stuff that you were just talking about, where you lift your left leg and then your right arm.
And so what does that sound like to you?
So how are you doing with that program, Dennis?
I am doing well. But
okay.
What I'm thinking is I'm 71 years old. I'm hearing everybody recommends get the knee surgery while you're a little bit younger, because when you're older, there's more complications and...
No. The answer is no. So I will tell you anecdotally, I just saw a patient who had the worst x-rays I have ever seen in my life. You want to talk about bone on bone, and he has zero pain because he does all these things you're doing, Dennis. And he just saw his orthopedic surgeon, and the orthopedic surgeon said, we don't operate on x-rays, we operate on people. And so, you got to wait until the symptoms are really limiting your activity, because there's so much more than just what we see on x-ray.
And yep. there's very little correlation mm-hmm. between imaging and symptoms.
Right.
We see that across the board, whether you have bone on bone or whether you have relatively mm-hmm. pristine knees but have a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. And you are, you know, when Jill and I, when we give lectures on various things, literally at the end of the day, it boils down to diet and exercise. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter what you're talking about, whether it's orthopedics, whether you're talking about cancer,
gut health,
all that stuff, it's diet and exercise. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. you're doing exactly what you need to be doing, Dennis.
Right,
keep
right.
it up.
Fabulous.
And if it's 10 years down the road when he's
great.
80, doesn't...
And the technology with joint replacements has improved so much that I don't think we worry about that as much anymore.
And in 10 years, if Dennis keeps up with his good diet and his exercise,
right.
he's going to be pretty healthy.
Right, exactly, exactly.
He's not going to be unhealthy.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Dennis, there you go. Stay, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, go live your life. Go enjoy exercise. Yeah.
Mary in Pewaukee, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Yes, thank you. I wanted to just let you know that my new favorite thing to do, and I've tried all the other things that I've heard you guys talking about, is Tai Chi.
Oh.
And I did take a class, actually, a few years back at WCTC. So there are classes out there. But now recently, I've been doing it for free on YouTube. So just simple, in your home, they have the walking, the backwards walking. There are different, easier ones and a little bit more advanced. And then they have all kinds of exercises. You just pick the one you like or vary it up.
So thank you for sharing that, Mary. Tai Chi has come out in the musculoskeletal research as being a great way to work on balance, breathing, calming down the nervous system a little bit. My co-instructor that I teach with at the university is Tai Chi certified, and she actually does research in the Milwaukee area looking at getting Tai Chi accessibility to lower income individuals and looking at the outcomes. So yes, Tai Chi is fabulous. So absolutely. Yeah. Thanks
Thank
for sharing.
And a free, and she's doing it
free.
For free. There you
yeah.
go. Exactly. I love that.
Free's good.
Yep. Free is great.
Thanks, Mary. Jim in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. I am 12 weeks out from having open heart surgery. I had a bypass done.
Okay.
And I have a constant neck pain. Predominantly on the right side, but both right and left. And someone told me that his wife had a similar experience post open heart surgery. Hmm. I'm wondering if you think there's any validity to that, and if I should pursue physical therapy
yes.
to try to improve my situation.
Yes to both those things. And I don't think it's really related specifically to the heart surgery, but to the position you're in during surgery. Mm-hmm. So we see that often where someone might go in for one kind of surgery or another, and then they come out with, I've got back pain. Well, you know, you are on the table in a certain position for a long period of time. So my guess it has to do with the positioning on the table, and absolutely go in
right.
and get seen and get started on a program mm-hmm. to recover from that.
Yeah, makes good sense. Jim, good luck. Thank you. Joe in Eau Claire, we'll go to you now. Hi, Joe.
Hey, so I've got arthritis in my left big toe, and I've been thinking about getting it fused. They say that it's not going to affect my gait, the gait of my walk, but I find that hard to believe. I've taken cortisone shots. Sometimes they work, sometimes not. They usually don't last as long as they should.
The pain is getting kind of crazy. Will you think the fusing of my toe will affect the gait of my walk or not?
Yes. It will. Yeah. You need to walk normally. You need about 70 degrees of extension at your MTP joint to walk normally. Have you tried a rocker bottom shoe? Have you changed your shoes to prevent how much toe motion you need? Like a clog? You know, a shoe. Like
I don't know which way to go with that. So no, I haven't.
Yeah. I would play around with that, but the other thing that comes to mind when you ask if it's going to change your gait. If you have pretty significant arthritis in that joint,
that's true.
Like, I don't know how much motion you have right now.
That's a fair
So the
statement.
Question is, if you're getting it fused, like, how much motion are you losing from what you actually have right now?
That's a really good point. So it would change dramatically for somebody like Lori and me who have good motion. But that's a really good point, Lori. So it might take away your pain, but not really alter your gait.
Yeah. From what your gait currently is,
right.
And I don't know what that is, but you make a good point, Jill, about the rocker bottom shoe really helps people, or a stiff bottom shoe can help. So you were saying you weren't sure which way to go with that, Joe?
Yeah.
Well, you have to try it. I mean, I don't know that anyone can tell you what's going to work, but going to a good shoe store where they know their business, so, you know, not a self-serve shoe store, but to a good shoe store where they have staff that are trained in how to look at this and trying things out. Because it, you know, my guess is you're going to be dealing with this whether you fuse or not. You're going to want to have the right shoe for you.
Correct. Yeah, and you're in Eau Claire, so you're going to find a shoe store there.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guest today. We are talking about aches and pains and how to deal with them with our two guests, and you'll be able to join in too at 800-642-1234. You can email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Hope you'll join us tonight at 7 for Wisconsin's 46th annual tribute and ceremony honoring Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's hosted by WPR's own Jonathan Overby. Special broadcast focuses on the power of unity and features keynote speaker journalist Ahmed Baba, plus music by the gospel group The Victory Travels, Wisconsin Poet Laureate Brenda Cardenas, and the presentation of the 2026 MLK Heritage Awards. That's tonight on WPR News at 7. And tomorrow on the show, tax professional Mary Mellon returns to answer your questions about filing your tax returns. Right now, physical therapist with our guests Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, and Scott in La Crosse has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Scott.
Hi. Last 10 months, I've had a numb foot. It varies from like 1 to 5 over the course of the day. I've been diagnosed with spinal stenosis. I've done the anti-inflammatory, physical therapy, chiropractor, epidural shots in the back with no result. Is surgery my best and last option at this point, would you say?
So what are the surgeons telling you?
Spinal stenosis. I'll let you guys explain what that's all about. That's impinging a nerve that's causing my numb foot.
Okay.
And I've had the EMG, which came back normal.
Okay. All right. So it's foraminal stenosis. Is that right?
Yes. But okay. That's what the doctor.
Okay. And how did you fare with the epidural?
Nothing.
Oh, nothing.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, typically the epidural is sort of a road test to see how well you would do with surgery. So you really want to have a successful epidural to know the level of the nerve impingement and that it's going to improve with the surgery.
Was it ultrasound-guided injection? So did they do it under a fluoro or ultrasound, Scott?
Yes.
Okay. And just one?
Wow. Mm-hmm. Just one level?
Yes. One in December. I have another one scheduled for March.
Okay. Yeah. So sometimes it takes more than one.
Yes.
And sometimes they do a different level or they put it in a slightly different place. So I would stick with that. I would continue to manage this conservatively for as long as you can. And I would just stay in close contact with the surgeons and with your physical therapist. I would also maybe try getting in a pool to see if exercising in an unweighted environment changes your symptoms at all, because that's information. And I'm going on the assumption that this is foraminal stenosis and not central canal stenosis, because central canal stenosis is a completely different beast.
All right.
I'm guessing if you're getting epidurals, it's foraminal. Correct.
All right. Scott, good luck. Stay with it. Thank you very much for calling. Ann in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Hey, this may be a little off topic, but I'm in my later 60s, and I have pretty severe osteoporosis. And I'm told that I should see a good weight trainer. I mean, I have seen physical therapists in the past and working on the core, that type of thing, balance, are very important things. But how does one go about finding a good weight, a good trainer?
Boy,
and
that,
you're in Madison.
That is a great question. So because there's a lot of gyms that, you know, just have, you just want to know, you want to know the credentials of the person who you're seeing. I think what I would do is I'd start with a reputable health club and see if they have a personal trainer or a person who really specializes in osteoporosis. I think some of the bigger health clubs do. Many of those that have, Lori, there's an aquatic class for osteoporosis. I can't remember what it's called, but it's a credentialed class.
No, so, that's for osteoarthritis.
Oh, that's for osteoarthritis.
The arthritis
gentle
association.
Joints, or joints of motion.
Arthritis. But in terms of finding a place, yes, I would start with the gym.
Yes.
And sometimes you can get a 1 month membership to see how that goes. I'm just going to put in a plug for the Science Drive, the fitness center at Science Drive. The staff who are there, they've been there almost as long as I have, and they are used to working with people who have various health conditions. A very well trained staff. I wouldn't sign up for a year to start out with, because you would want to make sure that the place has the right match for you in terms of the staff, the clientele that's there, the schedules, the facilities that they have, whether or not they have equipment that fits you. I mean, there's a number of things that go into finding the right weight training program. And you're right that weight training is going to be really important for you. So finding a place where you can do it that is sustainable, that you enjoy, that works for your lifestyle. I see so many people who come in and say, well, you know, I've got this, you know, lifetime membership or a 12-month membership, and I'm really locked in there because I'm paying every month, but I don't like going there.
Right.
So don't overcommit. Correct. At the start.
Maybe a month or what?
Just give it a month trial and have a few sessions with a personal trainer and make sure you like that person, things like that. The health club that I belong to has a women's only, it's a very small room, but it's a women's only room with weights in it, weight machines, various things. And there's a lot of what I would consider people my age and above who love working out in there because they don't want to work into a weight machine with, you know, a very athletic 24-year-old male or something like that. It's a really safe space. And I think that's very popular. So just getting to know the feel of the gym, things like that.
Good luck, Ann. Thank you.
It's a great question.
Mm-hmm. Phyllis in Winona, Minnesota. It's your turn. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. Larry, I want to say how much I love your show, and I'm so sorry you're retiring.
So are we.
Yeah. Anyway, my question is, I have disc degeneration, C5 and C6. I've had problems related to this for many years. Over the years, I've been treated by both chiropractic and physical therapy. I've recently moved, so I don't have those same practitioners. I recently had a pretty bad episode and was treated by a chiropractor. It's under control now. But I'm wondering, I feel I should be doing some kind of ongoing maintenance. I don't know whether it would be better to do that with physical therapy or with a chiropractor?
So I would definitely seek out the services of a physical therapist to get you on an appropriate exercise program. As experienced as you are, unfortunately, with your neck, Phyllis, you know, it probably wouldn't take very many visits because you know what you're doing, to get you on a kind of a maintenance type program to make sure that you maintain your mobility, your range of motion, things like that. So they may have some positioning ideas for you, et cetera.
Yeah, and as well as some education. So, you know, wondering why you go into these flares now and again, if you have any insight into what stirs the pot. Otherwise, a physical therapist may be able to look at how you move, how you transition positions, talk to you about how you typically sleep, and provide you some advice on preventing these flares.
Good luck, Phyllis. Thank you very much for calling. Ron in Land O'Lakes, we go to you now. Hi, Ron.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, thanks. I've had lower back pain for years and was going to physical therapy this past year for some time. It really didn't help. I was then guided to have a back simulator implant put in, which I had that done, and that kind of helped with the nerve pain. But I still have muscle pain where at times I can't even stand up straight for, you know, it's just too painful for a couple of weeks and then it goes away. So the pain clinic now has said go back to physical therapy and stay on pain medicine. I'm just wondering, is there any other guidance you could give me? Physical therapy really didn't help.
And do you know why that is? Were you unable to do the exercises, or the exercises were painful, or they weren't the right exercises? Do you have any insight into that?
No, it wasn't. The exercises were not painful. It's just that after going for months, the physical therapist up here was saying, you know, this isn't helping. I said, yeah, I know it's not helping with my muscle pain in the lower back. So that's why they said, well, let's have you go to the pain clinic and have them evaluate you, and they did, and they said, okay, you need to have a, after the injections didn't work, they said you need to have an implant put in, which I did, but that's only helping the nerve pain, not the muscle pain, so I'm headed back to physical therapy, but I'm thinking it's kind of like a vicious circle.
Yeah.
Right.
So have you tried exercising in a pool at all?
No, I have not.
So, I mean, it's not, excuse me, it's not for everybody, but I have seen a lot of people who have fairly significant pain. I see a lot of people from the pain clinic, and they tend to do pretty well in the pool because they can tolerate a higher level, a higher workload without the compressive loads on their spine. They also find stretching to be more comfortable in the pool. So that might be useful as well. So are these muscles in your back primarily or muscles elsewhere?
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's lower back. It's my lower back.
Yeah. Okay. So I didn't know if it was just muscles in your low back that were painful. Have you had any dry needling to the muscles in your back?
Oh, I think we lost. Lost, Ron. Well, so is that something you might recommend they do?
Well, I was going to toss that to Jill since she's the needler.
So potentially that would be something you could consider. The other thing is, you know, he talked about the implant helping with his nerve pain, but it doesn't sound like he's really tried physical therapy again since he's had that in. So maybe now that the nerve pain is kind of under control, maybe another bout of physical therapy would actually help the muscle pain.
So That's another idea.
I think I'd try that. It sounded like he was driving. So the other question would be thinking about positioning in a car, what he does for a living, things like that, to see if there's any other modifications you could make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes good sense as well. Well, we are talking about all kinds of physical therapy, and so lots of great questions today from our two guests, Lori Time Brody, physical therapist, recently retired from the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill Time Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. And they will be with us right up until 12:30 today, and you'll be able to join in with your questions. I'm Larry Mehler for WPR News. Thank you. It is another physical therapy day here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here with my guests, physical therapist Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody. Great to have them back. And join in with your own questions and comments as we move along. And lots of callers online. I think we should just go right to the phones. And Laura in Hayward is up first here. Laura, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you. I have a question. It is about reconstructive therapy instead of having orthopedic surgery. Could you comment on that?
What exactly do you mean by reconstructive therapy, Laura? Can you give us kind of an example?
It's a book I recently read by William Farber and Morton Walker. It's a procedure where they inject fluids into the joint to stimulate the repair of the tendons and ligaments. Do you know anything about that?
Is it PRP? Is it platelet-rich plasma?
No, it's not plasma.
What is it? Do you know? What is the fluid?
I'd have to look it up in the book, but I don't know. It's different kinds of, it's not a chemical. It's just these fluids that they inject.
Mm-hmm.
This Farber is from Milwaukee, and from what I understand, he does advertise too. And I don't know anyone in this area that knows anything about that.
Yeah.
So looking up kind of the term reconstructive therapy, it's regenerative injection therapy, uses injections like sugar water, PRP, or stem cells into injured ligaments. So mm-hmm. I am thinking that the term that Laura is referring to is a kind of
global,
an umbrella term, mm-hmm. and that there are other things listed under here, such as injections like platelet-rich plasma, stem cells, sugar water, probably saline would mm-hmm. go in that category mm-hmm. as well, to kind of jumpstart, if you will, the body's healing response.
Yeah, I mean, the most common thing that I've seen injected other than PRP is stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know anybody here that's doing that. I've had patients who have flown to the coasts to have stem cell injections done. Nobody that I've seen has done very well with them.
The only other thing would be if it's a hyaluronic acid injection
right.
in a joint.
Yeah, lots of that happening
lots
here.
Of that happening.
Lots of
with,
that happening
with good
here.
Outcomes at the knee mm-hmm. and slowly starting to see some outcomes, is my understanding, at the hip.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much what we can tell you about this particular
yeah,
person.
Yeah, I think... I think, like we alluded to, I think what Laura's referring to is the overarching term, and then it really breaks down to what exactly are they injecting to kind of trigger or recreate this healing environment. So platelet-rich plasma has kind of ebbed and flowed with regards to how popular it is. I know a lot of insurances don't pay for it. One of the things they are doing is sometimes they are injecting PRP when they actually do surgery to create a healing environment. Mm-hmm. So it's done concurrently with surgery for some better outcomes. But so it's one of those let's wait and see, I think.
It's still evolving.
Yes.
Okay. Still evolving.
Yes.
It is not settled science.
Correct.
Okay, so we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, that's a great way of saying it.
There you go, Laura. Thank you for calling. Betty in Ashland will turn to you now. Hi, Betty.
Hello there.
What can we do for you?
Hello. I have a question. I had a severe case of shingles about 2.5 years ago in my right arm. And after the lesions were gone, I developed neuropathy. And most of that first year, I didn't use my arm very much at all and developed a problem with my rotator cuff and almost kind of like a frozen shoulder, maybe. So I've been going to PT for it this last year, and PT helps me move my arm. I get better motion, but it's very painful.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, what is there anything I've had? I tried the pain clinic management thing, and I had some couple of shots done, which actually didn't help. I don't know what else I can try.
So if you're talking about having like a rotator cuff irritation and a frozen shoulder, how long, Betty, have you had those particular symptoms, like the frozen shoulder type of symptoms? Can you talk about that?
Probably 2 years at that point.
Yeah. I mean, the usual time course of a frozen shoulder is about 18 months.
Yeah.
And it will get better, you know, sometimes whether you have therapy or not. If you can catch a frozen shoulder very early, sometimes an injection helps, but it didn't help you. And you've been to the pain clinic. It sounds like you've tried most of the strategies that that we've discussed. What other ideas have they suggested for you? And is it primarily pain that you're dealing with, or loss of strength? Yeah. Do you have your full strength?
No, I don't. And it's the biggest thing that it's like trying to reach up to the top shelf in the cupboard, reach inside the refrigerator, you know, pull clothes out of the washer, that sort of thing, that I don't have full motion to do that. But the thing is, you know, it's the pain can be sometimes just unbearable.
Yeah.
So have they considered like an arthroscopic, a shoulder debridement where they just kind of go in and clean up scar tissue or anything like that for you, Betty?
No.
You're a tricky case. You're really, this is a tricky case.
Yeah. And I assume you've been down the path of the typical medications for nerve pain, the Neurontins and things like that.
Yep. I'm on pregabalin, and then I've tried the gabapentin and several other things. And I should tell you, I'm 85.
Yeah, but you're active. You're talking. You're talking about getting stuff off the cupboard shelf, doing laundry. You're living independently. So Wow. No, this is a tough case.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I've heard anybody who's had shingles that has had this kind of long-term manifestation.
Yeah. I mean, I would expect the pain clinic to have the most up-to-date interventions for this kind of thing. And then, you know, after that, we typically have people will go to Mayo and look and see at Mayo if they have anything new to offer there. That's where most of my patients who have really exhausted all their local resources, that's where they go.
Right. Mayo Clinic.
Yeah. And she's done kind of what I would think of as the normal logical steps.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, Betty, that you're not getting better.
Yeah. And thank you very much for calling. Well, consider Mayo Clinic. Carol in Wisconsin Rapids, we turn to you now. Hi, Carol.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a similar issue as a gentleman who called with arthritis in his big toe.
Oh.
My arthritis is in a joint at the top of my foot, so I can't remember what the joint is called, and it is pretty much shot. I have no cartilage left. I went to an orthopedic doctor, and he took the x-rays, and he said there's bone spurs, and I think he even said cysts, which kind of surprised me. But anyway, my question is, I did the least invasive, so I got new shoes, I got a different kind of insert for my shoes, and a topical thing that, you know, it doesn't really take the pain away. I find that my ability to walk is a little limited. So the next step is doing a cortisone shot, and I've had success in other areas where I've had arthritis issues. And then there is the final, which is a fusion. And I would like your input about how that would affect my gait.
So what joint do you think we're talking about, Laura? You kind of looked at me. Go ahead.
It's kind of like at the top of my foot.
Midfoot.
So you're thinking like joint of Lisfranc?
Like something Lisfranc. Along did you have an injury, or why do you have an And it's just in one foot and not the other.
Pretty much everywhere, but this is the newest place that it's popped up.
Oh, so this isn't systemic like a rheumatologic condition, is it, Carol?
I've never gone to a rheumatologist. I had a hip replacement when I was 55 because there was no cartilage left in that joint. I have my left shoulder that in the last 5 years has been problematic, and I've had success with a cortisone shot that's lasted for a year, which is pretty great, and I've had physical therapy that's helped.
Okay.
But this foot is a new thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, my guess is because she's in the medical system and people are looking at these joints, somebody along the line would have ruled out a rheumatologic thing. And that's why she hasn't seen one. It's just somebody gave you
bad articular cartilage.
So, well, it's really important that you're able to keep moving and continue walking. I don't think the fusion of your midfoot would be nearly as altering to your gait as the fusion of your great toe. Because when you walk, you typically land sort of a little bit on the outside of your heel, and then the load is transferred through your midfoot over to the big toe side. So it passes through a number of joints. The point being, you have a number of suspects in your midfoot that can accommodate it, whereas going out your big toe, you only have your big toe to accommodate that load. So just thinking about it from a mechanical point of view, I would think you would manage that pretty well.
Yeah, I agree. You'll be looking at shoes, like you had already talked about, Carol, that probably offer you some midfoot stiffness versus, you know, you're not going to want a shoe that does a lot of twisting or rotation in the midfoot. So it's going to be a little bit stiffer shoe probably is going to work for you.
Yeah.
Good luck, Carol. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in too. The number 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Somebody else was wondering in an email about weighted vests or arm and ankle weights. How can you use them without adding stress to your joints, or do you recommend them, I guess, is what the question is.
That is a million-dollar question. So weighted vests seem to be all the rage to increase bone mineral density for people. I see people walking in my neighborhood with them all the time. So the things you have to be cognizant of are how much the load is and where the load is being distributed. So if you're somebody who has stenosis or degenerative disc disease or herniated disc, you're not going to want to load your axial skeleton. In other words, you're not going to be wanting to wear one of those vests per se. I am personally not a huge fan of ankle weights because I feel like it puts too much traction on your other joints. So I'm not a big fan of those. Carrying weights, if you have good shoulder stability, is probably okay. So I think you have to be very, very careful. Are weight vests beneficial for certain people? They are, but you have to know kind of the status of your joints, particularly with a weight vest, your spine. It's a big deal.
Yeah. It's so many things. It's not yes or no.
Correct.
It's not like it's good or it's bad. It's applying it in the right situation. In terms of the hand weights, I like a wrist weight where you don't have to hold it, because that constant grip can be an issue. So if you have a small weight you can put around your wrist, that would be preferable. I don't love ankle weights either. Mm-mm.
So I tell some people who are curious, like, oh, I wonder if a weight vest is good for me, start with a backpack with like a weight in it and see how you feel. Now, the weight vest will distribute the load a little bit differently, but that's a way to see if you think it's going to be something that's beneficial for you.
All right. Makes good sense. Let's go to Colleen in Madison next. Hi, Colleen.
Hello, Larry. Thank you so much. And thank you, doctors. I have a question about chiropractic. I know there are a lot of people that swear by them to cure colds, to cure pains, to cure almost anything. And I'm just wondering, without you having to slam anybody, how do you feel about that?
For pain treatment.
Are you recommending?
Sure. So I'm happy to speak to that. In the athletic department, I work very closely with our chiropractor. We actually share patients. We exchange our knowledge. I feel that he is very good at what he does, and we know that the combination many times of a few visits with a chiropractor followed by physical therapy is really very beneficial for some of our athletes. I think like any healthcare provider, you just have to get to know them, understand them, make sure you're on the same page, you share the same philosophy. There are chiropractors out there, my understanding now, is who don't even do high velocity manipulations. They treat other ways. So I think it's with anything, Lori, it's knowing your provider.
Absolutely. The same could be true of physical therapy.
Absolutely.
You find a physical therapy who is not a good fit for you. Their approach to your treatment plan doesn't work for you. So, yeah, it absolutely. It depends upon the provider and not the title.
Correct. Okay. I've seen a chiropractor.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't fix myself.
And your husband couldn't fix you either?
No.
Okay. He's a PT also. Yes. So,
Colleen, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Let's turn to Marie in Ringel, I believe. Marie?
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
My question is about a drop foot. My daughter had COVID a couple of years ago. And then she was in the hospital for, I think it was 8 or 9 days. And then she developed diabetes. And then she got drop foot. And she has not been able to resolve that. They thought it was maybe a sciatic nerve that was preventing her from moving that foot. And so I'm wondering, is there anything that could be done to correct that?
So have they ruled out direct sciatic nerve cause of that? Have they figured out what's causing the drop foot?
What is a drop foot?
Yeah, they said that.
So a drop foot is when you are unable to bend your ankle and lift your foot. So if you imagine when you're walking, as you come through the mid-swing of phase, you pull up your foot and ankle to clear the floor. People with drop foot don't have the muscle strength to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then...
So have they figured out the cause of the drop foot?
No, this is the thing. Like I said, they thought possibly it was being prevented from a sciatic nerve. Well, that was ruled out. They really, I guess, couldn't really figure out what caused it or how it happened.
Did they do an EMG to assess whether or not the nerve to those muscles is functioning?
I'm not really sure.
Okay.
Does she have
They did a lot of different testing when she was, you know, in the rehab.
Sure.
They did rehab for her, and it's just that they could not figure out what happened.
Does she wear a kind of a brace that goes in her shoe and that attaches
her? I wish she would, because I think that she's going to have hip or knee problems eventually by not doing that.
Right,
yeah. So I'm wondering if it's all tied in with the diabetes.
Right.
And
neuropathy
associated with the diabetes. It sounds like she's had a lot of tests. So it looks like they have investigated it. But I guess the one thing I would say is she absolutely needs to wear that. It's called an AFO, an ankle-foot orthosis. Mm-hmm. She absolutely needs to wear that, because every time that foot flops down, she's getting traction on that nerve. So that if there is any hope of that nerve recovering, it's not being helped by her gait.
And
a risk of falls,
which is a big deal. So,
yeah.
No, she needs to wear her AFO.
Yeah.
Marie, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Question relating to sitting. Many people sit through their workday. Just how bad is sitting for you, and how can it can affect your mood? You know, like here in the studio, I sit for 2 hours, but I get up when there's a break.
Yeah, right.
Sitting is the, what do they say? Sitting is the new smoking. Yeah, yeah. Sitting is not great for on multiple levels.
Well, static position in any position, right. Even static standing isn't great.
Right, right. Your body is designed to move. Your joints are designed to move. Your muscles are designed to move. So even if you can do a sit-stand, sit-stand several times throughout your workday, getting up and moving and stretching would be really important. One of the things that we see with prolonged sitting is your hip flexor muscles. Your hip flexor muscles attach to the front of your low back. When you are sitting with your hips flexed, that muscle is shortened. So if you imagine yourself sitting for 8 hours of the day, that muscle's getting this message that it doesn't need to be as long as it probably should be. So what happens then is it tugs on your low back and creates back pain. So one of the simple causes of back pain we see in people who sit all day is tightness in their hip flexors. So getting up and moving and then stretching is going to be really key.
Mm-hmm.
Makes good sense to me. And on that note, we are out of time. It's been great, as always.
It has been. Time flew today.
It did.
A lot of great questions.
The time flew, and you will be back in
February.
Exactly 1 month.
Sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be here.
And we'll do it all over again. Thank
Fantastic.
You both.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guest. Lori is a physical therapist. She retired from the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, was starting up a new business with her sister, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, who is a professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. It's always great to have them come by. They do it once a month, and yeah, we always have many, many questions and some pretty good results based on the phone conversations we get from time to time from folks. Well, up next, the UW River Falls football team recently won the D3 national title. And we're going to talk about the program. We'll talk about that game a bit, but also talk about the program's head coach. Want to hear the story of what's going on at UW River Falls, and I can tell you there's a lot of good going on right there. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.